Welcome to Candid Catholic Convos, a program brought to you by the Catholic Diocese of Harrisburg. Our mission is to humanize the Church and help you to grow in your faith, love, and understanding. I'm your host, Rachel Trochet, a cradle Catholic who's only human and struggled with faith on more than one occasion. Each week, you'll hear engaging, down-to-earth interviews and actionable strategies you can implement into your life with ease to help you grow closer to God. If you're ready to open your heart and step fully into the person God created you to be, then you're in the right place. Let's get started. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Candid Catholic Convos. Today, we're going to be tackling some very hard but very relevant topics in the Church, and it's important that we approach such topics with grace and tact and prayerful understanding. Today, we will be talking about pro-life. Specifically, we will be addressing contraception and abortion. If you're listening to us live, it's Sunday, January 16th, and the Diocese of Harrisburg is holding its annual Respect Life Mass. This is an opportunity for Catholics throughout the diocese to commemorate the Roe v. Wade decision and the millions of lives that have been lost to abortion since 1973. The March for Life in Washington is also taking place this week, and if you'd like to participate, you can visit our website at hbgdiocese.org and click the March for Life button. I want to approach this with grace because one out of every four women has had an abortion, and 78.3% of women have felt pressure to have an abortion. 88% of sexually active women use contraceptives, and as an imperfect Catholic, I was one of them. I was fed this story that it was beneficial for my health. It would slow the growth of my endometriosis. It would stabilize my mood swings and my painful monthly cycles. It didn't. When I started experiencing adverse side effects, I was met with resistance from my doctors, who continued to feed the narrative that having a baby would ruin everything, that natural family planning has, quote, a high failure rate. It didn't. When I struggled to conceive my first baby, I was told my only answer would be IVF because the stage of my endometriosis wouldn't allow natural fertilization. It wasn't. My entire adult life, I felt this narrative that women are told once they become a certain age was somehow incorrect, and I couldn't shake it. I felt the medical community was just looking for band-aids rather than actually trying to heal me. It wasn't until we miscarried and I sank my grief into finding out exactly what was going on with my body that I realized other forms of family planning even existed. I had heard of this Catholic OBGYN practice years before, but I wasn't going to go there. They didn't prescribe the birth control, and I needed it for my endometriosis. Now I was turning to them desperately because they were the only ones in the area who specialized in this holistic and faith-based approach to medicine. The doctor who helped me through my miscarriage, who found the reason why my body couldn't maintain my pregnancy, and who delivered my very first baby was the same woman, and I'm not kidding, her name was Faith. If that isn't a sign from God, I don't know what is. Fast forward a few years later, and we're unexpectedly pregnant with our third child. A third child we couldn't financially afford and weren't ready to provide for. I called my best friend, and her first reaction was, "What are you going to do? Are you going to get it taken care of?" For me, the answer was clear. But for many women, one out of four to be specific, in that exact same position, the answer is not. It's muddled and murky and lonely. So from one imperfect Catholic to another, I want to extend you grace. God's mercy is deep and wide. There is no sin he won't forgive except the one you don't ask forgiveness for. Today, we have the honor of speaking to Drs. Anne-Marie Manning and Naomi Whitaker, two pro-life OBGYNs based in central Pennsylvania, to explain to us from a scientific perspective why abortion and contraception are not the only answers and why society portrays them as the only feminist options out there.
Well, ladies, thank you so much for joining me today. Can you tell me a little bit about yourselves and what your life as a pro-life practitioner looks like?
So I came here to this to Pennsylvania 3 years ago to join Anne-Marie Manning in her practice as a pro-life practice. And at that point, we were a hospital-based practice and shared a group call together to cover the emergency room, labor and delivery, and a clinic. I went to Creighton Medical School in Omaha, and at that point, I made the decision to practice OBGYN medicine in this way. So from the beginning, I studied extra hard to learn other ways to treat women's health issues that didn't involve birth control. Sought out training programs, which allowed me to defend the unborn and, you know, give the best quality of care, which is the best quality of care for the mom is also great care for the unborn child. And so I was able to seek out places that taught me how to give really good medicine to protect both mother and unborn child. And so, basically, I mean, it's very similar to a general OBGYN, but I'm able to do other things to treat underlying causes. And so I have more things in my toolbox, actually, to offer to patients as an alternative to what they usually are offered.
Okay, so my path was a little bit, Dr. Manning, you were talking to Dr. Whitaker just now. My path is a little bit more crooked than Dr. Whitaker's path. I started in practice here several decades ago, longer than I would like to admit. And I joined a general practice here and did sort of traditional OBGYN care, prescribed OCs, did tubal ligations, all of those things. Never really thought about it, even though I grew up Catholic, even though during my medical school training and I went home and I was very excited about having done my first tubal ligation or assisted. And one of my father's questions was, you know, didn't that bother you? And I kind of looked at him like he had two heads. Never really thought about it more than that because I was like many people and kind of, you know, didn't really pay attention to those teachings of the church. But I had been practicing here in a general OBGYN group for 6 years when my husband, who was not Catholic, started to go to RCIA and lots of questions came up. And when he got tired of me, every time he asked me, why does the church do this? And my response was, I don't know, hon, it's a mystery. He said, Anne-Marie, you should probably come to this class with me because I don't really think you know anything about this church. So anyway, I went to RCIA, was challenged by our parish priest there, and eventually came to a conversion of my own. I realized I had to stop prescribing if I was going to be faithful if I was actually going to be a faithful Catholic. I needed to stop prescribing OCs and doing tubals. And had the great support at the time of Sister Romaine at Holy Spirit Hospital. She helped, and the administration there helped me set up a new practice. So we opened a practice that was truly pro-life and was, you know, supportive of all the teachings of the Catholic Church. Continued as a general OBGYN practice, though, and taught and treated the whole gamut of medical problems in OBGYN, but didn't use oral contraceptives for contraception, didn't do tubal ligations anymore. At the time, I was about the 14th obstetrician gynecologist in the country to at least publicly be practicing that way. It was a very nice little community. We all got to know one another. Those folks were very supportive. I had the I was going to say good luck, but I really think it's providence to get connected through something my husband saw on EWTN about Dr. Hilders out in Omaha and kind of get be able to begin to learn how to practice without those typical crutches that gynecologists use of, you know, using all contraceptives to treat everything under the sun. And I had that great opportunity to go out to Omaha and begin to be trained by Dr. Hilgers. And kind of the practice evolved since then. So I think one of the biggest things about the difference between a pro-life practice, a true pro-life practice, and the usual OBGYN practice is that we're more focused on solving problems instead of just getting rid of symptoms. Because oral contraceptives can be used very successfully to get rid of symptoms, but that doesn't necessarily mean they've solved the problem.
So what called you to being an OBGYN? Why did you choose that line of medicine?
I had absolutely no intention of doing that. When I went to medical school, I was going to be a cardiologist. But when I did my OB, one of my OB rotations as a medical student, surprisingly or funnily enough, the two doctors I was working with, one of them had actually graduated or gone to high school in South Jersey with my mother. So we had this connection with them, but they took me on and I was doing my third year rotation with them. And I had the opportunity to see them do a forceps delivery of a baby that was in trouble. And I was just blown away by that. So as soon as I saw that, I knew that's what I wanted to do.
Yeah, I went to medicine thinking this is the one field I don't want to do. And I just thought it was pap smears and going to be pretty boring too. I had a deeper conversion before I chose this field in Omaha. And while my husband was deployed to Afghanistan and he wanted to start a family when he got back. And so I became a mother in medical school at the same time as I was deciding what to do with my life and what field to pursue. And so that experience, the medical care I received, which wasn't something that an approach that I could do now. It was so that led. Then I did my OBGYN rotation when my son was 2 or 3 months old, and I got to see the other side. And so that whole experience and seeing, being able to see what I was, the care that I was given, and then I was able to be with physicians who were Catholic and use Napper technology to help heal women, and how the beauty of motherhood was really embraced, and helping women with infertility and really neat surgeries. All those came together for me. I just saw this as a beautiful way to offer better care and medicine.
Why do you believe the medical community defaults to contraceptives to deal with almost every health issue, like you had talked about, mood disorders, irregular cycles? Why do you believe that it's actually the wrong answer in terms of how it applies to your body and what it can do to your body?
Speaking more broadly in terms of a societal answer, I'm kind of a feminist in this regard. I think women are ignored. And we used to tell women that all their problems were because they were anxious, and because they were nervous, and because their uterus was wandering, the word hysteria. I think it's an outgrowth of that. It's an easy way to make these problems go away. And it doesn't require a huge investment of time from the medical community on really solving the problems the women present with. I think it's a lack of respect for women in terms of the unique problems that they have and the unique potentials that they have, and how can we best support women, whether it's in a way to manage their fertility or to solve physical problems that they have, while still respecting them as women.
Yeah, in the 1960s when it was invented, it did change things for women. I don't know exactly what they were taught about their menstrual cycle at the time, or how effective NFP was, or how well known it was. But this seemed like a great idea in the 60s, and it helped. It was probably marketed very well at the time, And at that time, ACOG did redefine pregnancy to help promote the pill by saying that pregnancy didn't start until implantation instead of conception to help with accepting the pill into society. Also, they added the placebo pill days to make sure that women menstruated to make sure it felt normal for them. So there's definitely some marketing to start with. And then I think medicine was quick to take it on because it is quick. Women aren't going to die from a painful period. And medicine is really good at keeping women alive and saving babies with an emergency C-section. And so in medicine, we don't always do a great job in optimizing health and quality of life. That's just not what we're trained to do in our medical school training. And so I think we're still kind of stuck back. Women's health hasn't made a lot of progress. It tends to be pretty late to innovation. Most of the meds on the market aren't much different now than they were back in the 60s. The chemicals in the synthetic, these synthetic hormones change a little bit in their different generations, and they have different side effects, similar mechanism of actions, a little bit different dosing, but they're pretty much the same since the 60s. I do think it's kind of a lack of innovation. And yeah, why? I don't know. I mean, women need to demand better as well. And I think that's happening now. They see that they want something more. And especially with social media, there's a lot more knowledge around and desire to know more about our bodies and to try to get rid of toxins and, BPA and all that. So I think there is a big movement of women that are like, oh, I could get better care than that.
Yeah, that they're starting to advocate for themselves more. I wholeheartedly agree. So talk to me about NAPRO technology and how this type of medicine addresses all the issues without contraception.
Sure. So NAPRO technology it stands for Natural Procreative Technology. And so it's working cooperatively with the body to diagnose and treat underlying health issues. And so the way this is able to be done is empowering the woman with the knowledge of exactly how her menstrual cycle works. And the hard thing about women is that we're different every day of the month, unlike men that are constantly pretty similar. And so that is hard as a physician. If someone walks in the door and they don't know anything about their body, how are you going to help them unless they know what's going on? So we have them take a class called the Create and Model System of natural family planning so they can identify biomarkers. They're taught a standardized way of writing it down on a chart. And then I'm trained to interpret that as a language that I understand to run tests and interpret those tests to create a unique treatment for that woman.
How is that different? Because I know a lot of people hear natural family planning and they think of like the old school methods, like the calendar method or the rhythm method, which were, from what I understand, largely unreliable. Would you consider Creighton Model or like Marquette to be more reliable than something like that?
Yes. Yeah, so it is a way to prospectively or in the day know exactly what's going on that day instead of relying on old cycles to predict fertility.
One of the issues with things and the rhythm method or calendar methods of natural family planning was, they were in their time back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, even a big step forward in terms of understanding that there were specific times in the cycle that a woman could conceive and certain times that she could not. But they were basically treated all women as the same and every cycle as the same and assumed that fertility in each cycle in every woman could be figured out just by counting how many days she was in the cycle. And we know that that's not true. Women's cycles can vary wildly from one woman to another, and even a particular woman, depending upon what's going on in her life at one time can have cycles where she is that are different. So maybe she usually ovulates on day 11 of a cycle, but she's under a particular stress or something else is happening. And this cycle, she doesn't ovulate until day 16 or doesn't ovulate at all. We needed to learn how to help women be able to understand themselves, what was happening in their cycles and when they were fertile. And that's what some of the folks who stepped up to Pope John Paul II's call for physicians to, you know, step up here and figure this out and help women out. And there were physicians throughout the world who did that. The Billings in Australia, Dr. Hilders in Omaha, and others stepped up to, you know, do the research that was needed to help women figure that out. So the newer ways, and we like to call it fertility appreciation now instead of natural family planning because it's a broader term. Every woman should be able to appreciate her fertility and understand her cycles. But we were able to learn what's the underlying here. What are the signs? What are things that any woman can identify? And as she is helped to understand her cycles, can identify what's happening in her own body and when is she fertile and when is she not fertile based upon basic biologic signs that she can observe. And once you get started with that, then a whole science actually opened up where you can correlate that with what's going on with hormones, and you get insight into not just fertility for planning a family, but insight into problems in the woman's cycle. Does she have medical issues like polycystic ovarian syndrome? Does she have an ovarian cyst unrelated to that in this cycle? Does she have symptoms of endometriosis? Does she have symptoms of thyroid disease? Any number of things that often women, once they've learned to understand their cycles, will come in and almost tell you what they've got because they understand their body and they understand what's happening.
I love that. Fertility appreciation. Talk about empowerment for a woman to be able to understand her body on that type of a level. That's incredible. Speaking along the lines of issues like PCOS and endometriosis, talk to me about IVF. The IVF process and why in vitro fertilization and other bioethics practices are not necessarily in line with the church teachings. And how is something like NePro technology beneficial for someone who's struggling with infertility? I know that's kind of a loaded question.
Yeah, so in theology of the body, we're taught the beauty of both components of the unitive and procreative parts of marriage and how those are both so incredible and so important for marriage. And that's what God's design is for marriage. And taking either one of those away is harmful to the marriage because it's taking away, you know, an appreciation or saying there's a part of the other person. You love everything but that part of them. Mm-hmm. So by shutting down, for example, with birth control, shutting down the procreative part. It's saying, I love everything about you, but your ovulation and how you were created to make children. Now, the unitive part, you know, is the physical bond between man and woman and creating life together. And so with IVF, there's so many layers you could go into, but it completely takes the man away. I've seen, and even IUI is an important thing to include in that. So intrauterine insemination, where the male in the relationship has to collect a sample in a room away from his wife. And I've seen an IUI with an IVF doctor, and the husband was miles away. You know, in that act, the husband was not involved, you know, in the creation of that life. And there is something to be that's lost in that, for the husband and the child and the mother. And so there, it gets even, but then there's even another level to it when you add IVF, where a sperm and egg are put in a petri dish together to have conception in a dish in a lab with a stranger, a scientist, and they create embryos. They look at these embryos and discard the ones that don't meet the standards, or they do genetic testing and eliminate genders or eye colors, or again, potential genetic issues. Then you have other ethical issues where you get 5 embryos, and all 5 are good. And the first one implants, you have 4 frozen. What do you do with that? And I've had a patient who herself has infertility, and she was conceived through IVF. And she struggles with that. And she struggles with the 9 other embryos that are sacrificed for her life. And she has survivor guilt from that. So we also know there are medical issues related that we won't go into, but there's so many ramifications to this that we probably don't even comprehend.
And, you know, there's always, I've talked about this fairly frequently, and you're always questioned, well, how can you be opposed to IVF if you're pro-life? Because IVF is pro-life. You're working. And there certainly are lots and lots of folks who think that that's what they're doing. And they're saying, I'm only doing this because I want, you know, to be supportive of have new life and help promote new life. But that motivation doesn't change what the process is. And unfortunately, there is, as Dr. Whitaker said, there is a connection between the unitive, the union of the man, a husband and wife, in an act of sexual intercourse, and the creation of new life. And the church teaches us that we should not be pulling those two purposes of the marital act apart.
We've unfortunately run out of time, but if you'd like to hear more from Dr. Manning and Dr. Whitaker, you can find the rest of this episode on Spotify under Candid Catholic Convos and listen anytime. Next week, we'll be continuing our discussion with Father Steve Kelly, pastor of Holy Trinity Church in Columbia and an active participant in the pro-life movement. Thank you so much for listening. Our goal at the Diocese of Harrisburg is to walk with you on your faith journey. So if this episode resonated with you in any way, the easiest way to show your appreciation is by sharing this program with your network or by leaving a review on your listening platform. You can also support us financially by making a donation online at hbgdiocese.org/DAC and clicking the Make a Donation button. Thanks again, and we'll see you at church on Sunday.